George Carlin was a brilliant comedian and social critic, but according to his daughter Kelly, life in the Carlin household was not always a picnic. She'll be performing her one-woman show, A Carlin Home Companion, growing up with George at the All for One Theater Festival, Cherry Lane Theater at 38 Commerce Street on October 11th, 13th, 17th, and 19th. And I am delighted that it has brought her to our show today. And I know that I don't have to tell her which words she can't say on the air.
Are they still called the Carlin words? Actually,
well,
they used to officially be called the Carlin words on a little sheet of paper.
He actually did a benefit for WBAI when I was there.
He certainly did.
Because they had gone all the way to the Supreme Court, unfortunately lost. He was a guest on this show several times, and in your show you include photos and videos of his performances. Is your show partly memoir, but also partly an homage to him?
It's a great way to explain it. Yes, it is definitely memoir. It is my story ultimately, but it was birthed in homage to him. It was born on a cruise ship with Lewis Black, who asked me to come on board, a friend of his, do a day event, and I started just putting together, played some videos, told some stories. And for me, it's always been about the fans. I want the fans to get to have another experience with him.
Well, I remember Richard Pryor admitting that life with him was no day on the beach. Do you think that comedians are particularly hard to live with because of the kind of thing they do?
Yeah, well, sure. They travel a lot. Dads who travel a lot, or moms, whoever the entertainer is, that's difficult on a family, period. Also, you know, Richard, my dad, of a certain time, of a certain era, of a certain type of person, you know, can we say a dysfunctional alcoholic family? Yes, we can. So that was part of it, too, was just we were the typical crazy family.
How old were you when you first became aware that who your father was and what he did for a living?
I think I must have been about 6 or 7 when it really kind of hit me, like, oh, well, especially when the colleges started, like 71, 72, that was 8 or 9. That was really when it became obvious, you know, when people were like cheering his name and things like that.
Although he had already changed a bit in the 60s, he was pretty squarely in the mainstream, kind of clean cut.
Yes.
Wore suits, appeared on The Tonight Show as a regular guest. And then at a certain point, he transformed himself into something of a counterculture figure. Was that because of the influence of Lenny Bruce, or did he just feel constrained by the other approach?
Yeah, he was always the counterculture guy on the inside. On the outside, he was playing the game. He wanted a career, and that was the game you played. You got small bits on all those TV shows. And, his first dream was to be Danny Kaye. He wanted to be the actor, the comedic actor.
Did he sing?
No, he didn't sing, but he certainly, as you know, he has the verbal gymnastics of Danny Kaye. That in his mind, that was the route. You know, you do the TV, and then you get the movies. And yet he was the whole time hanging out with musicians smoking weed.
And it's interesting that his acting career took off when the more outrageous he appeared in public.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly in the 80s, his acting took off, and he had a love-hate kind of relationship with the films. Part of him really wanted to be in that, and yet it was such a leap for him in as far as the craft.
But he used to talk. He talked on the show a number of times about actually being an actor. He said, unlike Lenny Bruce, he never improvised, that he would work out the script and stick to it, even including the ers and the uhs.
Yeah, his stand-up was word for word written, and he perfected it. He does not go on stage. He did not go on stage and riff that night. Back in the day, in the 70s, he did a lot more. But certainly the last 20 years, what you saw of him was perfected poetry.
Did he talk much about it over the dinner table?
No, we didn't talk a lot about the biz.
Did your parents allow you to hear his routines in those years, which sometimes had a lot of four-letter words in them.
Oh, yes. I was always the little girl in the audience listening to those words, and I always felt bad for the adults who would kind of turn around and go, like, is this okay? And then I would want to say, no, it's really, it's fine. But it was a little strange. Yeah.
Well, did they have to talk to you, your parents, about what was acceptable at school as opposed to what was acceptable when Dad was doing his act?
Yes. The rule was at school and other friends' homes, you abide by the rules of the culture. And at home, anything goes as long as you don't use words to harm other people or against them, sure.
Your father was arrested after a performance of his Seven Dirty Words routine in Milwaukee's Summer Fest in 1972. Were you there?
I tell the story in the show. I certainly was there. It was very, very terrifying.
How old were you?
I was 9 years old. Yes, it was scary.
And what did you think had happened? What and how did they explain it to you afterwards?
I knew exactly what was going on. The promoter had warned us that they were going to arrest him the minute he came off the stage because of language in the area. He was doing these four, you know, seven dirty words in front of kids and everything. And but it was 1972. It was a very scary time in America. We had just been to Kent State earlier. I learned about what happened at Kent State. So it really felt like us against them in the culture at that time. And I was afraid that I might never see him again. It was just a terrifying moment as a child.
Well, how long did that last? Weren't the charges dropped?
Oh, yeah. No, I spent the weekend with the promoter's family and they bailed him out, you know, 48 hours later. But, you know, as a kid, you don't really know what's going on. I'm in a strange city. My mom's now, you know, hanging out at a police station. I'm with these strange family in the suburb. it was weird. It was daunting.
I'm talking with Kelly Carlin, who has a one-woman show called A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George, which she will be performing over the next week or so at the Cherry Lane Theater on Commerce Street in the Village. And that title is an obvious reference to Garrison Keillor, whose humor is very different than your father's.
I thought it'd be fun to kind of play on it, you know, because what I'm doing in my show is I am inviting people to come into the Carlin home. And you know, I was born in Dayton, Ohio. My mom was born in Dayton, Ohio. And that's about as prairie home as we get in the Carlin family. But I thought I would have some fun with
that. How did you come to be born in Dayton? George Carlin grew up in Manhattan.
My mother was born and raised there. And she decided to go home to have me because my dad was on the road a lot at that time. So
you describe some incidents of your father's drug use, including a bad acid trip. Did he also, and then you suggested earlier that he had problems with alcohol, I'm assuming the other things, painkillers, cocaine.
Actually, cocaine was the real issue in the 70s. He was never much of a drinker. My mom had a real difficulty with alcohol and almost died from it. She ended up going to rehab after almost dying from alcohol and cocaine.
And what about your father? Did he get treatment for substance abuse?
He did, finally, when he was 66 years old.
And were they open?
But let me just put a caveat on that. He quit doing all the big, nasty, scary stuff in the late 70s. He smoked weed his whole life, but he was never an abuser of other things, you know.
Well, teenagers rebel against their parents. How do you rebel against parents who are acting like teenagers?
Yeah, well, that is a good question.
Did you become very straight-laced?
No. But I just kept pushing the edges. I found myself an older man who was on probation for a federal weapons charge. You know, you got to stir the pot a little bit somehow.
There's always something worse.
There's always another line to find.
In retrospect, do you think that your parents were good parents?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. No matter what, there was so much love in our household. And that's really what this show is about and what I portray in this show is the great depth of loyalty and love and affection. And what a great gift both my parents were to my life.
And you had to have been very proud of his career. He hosted the premiere episode of Saturday Night Live when the show was funny. He did 14 HBO specials, had his own sitcom on Fox, appeared in lots of other TV shows and films, won 5 Grammys for his comedy albums, wrote several books. Was he always working on something new?
Yes, he was a workaholic, 100%. 90% of his life and psyche went to his work. He was very committed.
And he also took on controversial topics, abortion, the death penalty, censorship, politics, religion. Did he see his role as being more than just an entertainer?
He would say no. But I think those of us in the audience would say back to him, but you change our mind, you change our thinking every time you speak. So, but no, for him, if it wasn't entertaining and it wasn't getting a laugh, then he wasn't in the right role. He really cherished that role. But he also was a great thinker. And I think for him, he loved letting people know, look what I'm thinking about now. Let's think about this together.
Do you see his influence on comics working today?
100%. Absolutely. And because they tell me that, of course. But yes.
Because he found a way to find humor in things that were often very serious.
Yes. And I think the comics that can go into those serious issues, are standing on his shoulders. Absolutely.
Now, did you always plan to follow in his footsteps, become a performer? Didn't you get a degree in psychology?
And that was 10 years ago. So that was kind of a midlife thing for me. But growing up, it was Lucille Ball, Lily Tomlin, people like that, Monty Python, the original cast of SNL, as you were saying. That always called to me. I didn't really know how to find my place. That's a lot of what the show is about, me finding my way. But yes,
Is that why you became a therapist or planned to become a therapist?
I think for me, the study of the human psyche is fascinating, and I'm very interested in what it takes for people to find their way in their journey through life, as I have mine. So it was just something I wanted to add to my toolkit. In for my writing and performing.
And this show was directed by Paul Provenza, who directed the film The Aristocrats. That included more than seven dirty words.
Yes, at least 200, right?
Did he work with your dad?
I don't know if he ever worked with him, but certainly he was very much influenced in him. And I tell a story about my dad coming to Carnegie Hall in 72, and Paul was in the audience at that performance. And I wouldn't have done this show without Paul. Paul's the one who looked at me and said, I'd love to direct this. And I thought, well, if Paul Provenza is going to direct this, then I'm willing to get on stage and do this.
Have you done it in other cities?
I have. I've been doing it in L.A. a lot. I've been doing other comedy festivals the last 2 years.
Have you changed it, or are you holding true to your father's approach?
You know, what has changed these last 2 years? I'd say 95% of the words are there, but I'm learning how to be on the stage. I'm learning how to be a performer. I'm getting the first of my, first 100 of my 10,000 hours right now. And so it changes because I have changed the last 2 years.
You're also going to be teaching a workshop at the Cherry Lane on how to do a solo show.
I'm actually going to help, going to bring up some of my master's in psychology work and some of the coaching I do. And I'm going to help people work on the creative process in general and connect it to the solo process.
You also have a podcast called Waking from the American Dream on Sirius?
Actually, the podcast is on Smodcast. Uh-huh. And it's a weekly podcast. And I talk to visionaries and authors and spiritual teachers and comedians and anyone who's kind of lives outside the mainstream.
Do you think that there's a comedy gene?
Wow, that's a good question.
I mean, are the kids of comedians, because I'm sure you've known a few, do they tend to be funny too?
I think there is. I think there's definitely a verbal gene, and I think comics are smart and very verbal, and I learned to read before I was 3, so I think I have that word thing.
Do you use your psychological training in your comedy?
I do. I'm not a stand-up, but I certainly use it in my writing, and I talk a lot about it in my essays on my podcast, and certainly you can see the influence of it in this show, yes.
You'll be appearing, as I mentioned earlier, on October 11th, 13th, 17th, and 19th as part of the All for One Theater Festival at Cherry Lane Theater at 38 Commerce Street. Will you be taking it to other cities after that?
That's the plan.
I'm assuming you would like to have a longer run here in New York.
Yes, I would love to come back, have a longer run in New York. And really, my initial vision for this show was to be able to go to every town and city my father ever went to. And for his fans there, who got to see him once every 18 to 24 months and has not seen him in 5 years, for them to be able to come and get to see my dad again, get to see this whole 360 degree of him, and of course come out and get to meet me too. That would be my dream.
Have you done it in Dayton yet?
I haven't. I want to go.
What reaction have you gotten from his fans?
Pure love. Pure, pure love. A lot of gratitude And I feel very held up and honored to be part of their world.
We have ticket information on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Kelly Carlin for being on our show. Her show, One Woman Show, A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George, is part of the All for One Theater Festival at the Cherry Lane Theater. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been wonderful. Thank you, Leonard.